Cora, on the other hand, was feeling a bit conflicted. Originally, she hadn't wanted to take part in any of this, but she'd really gotten into it somewhere along the way. Figuring out an opponent's weaknesses and then mercilessly targeting them with pinpoint precision was Boxy's preferred method of resolving conflicts, and it treated intercourse in much the same way. Even if the demon's nature abhorred being dominated by anyone, let alone a mortal, she hadn't been able to resist giving in to the mimic's onslaught. It had shown her that she could feel pleasure in ways she hadn't even been aware of, and that alone was more than enough to overwhelm her dissatisfaction. At the end of the day, experiencing new and exciting things was the main reason why demons agreed to summoning contracts in the first place. Things were far less rosy for Fizzy, however. Though she'd wanted no part of the affair, she had ultimately been far too weak to stop Boxy treating her like a plaything. While she had managed to endure weeks of constant mental and physical abuse, this had finally broken her. She remained motionless, her dead eyes gazing blankly. It didn't take a genius to see that she was utterly traumatized, driven to new depths of despair at the hands of the uncaring, selfish monster. It seemed that she was forever destined to be the creature's possession, but she was unable to find any joy in her servitude, unlike those demons. As for Valeria, the impetus for the recent turn of events, she was finally satisfied. Completely, utterly, and unequivocally fulfilled. If this was always how the mimic rewarded her, then doing its bidding seemed like a perfectly reasonable trade-off. So what if it had murdered her? She had felt more alive during these past 2 hours than she had in her entire life and unlife combined. Boxy, on the other hand, was regretting its actions. Much like every other new endeavor it had set out on, it had overdone things and neglected its physical state like some kind of workaholic. This had left it not only profoundly hungry and thirsty, but also exhausted to the point where it felt as though it was about to black out. It made a mental note to be more moderate in the future, as depleting its stamina to this degree had left it momentarily vulnerable. On the upside, its shapeshift proficiency had gone up by 14%, which was pretty impressive progress for only 2 hours of work. Snack had also mentioned that she had some great ideas regarding how to take things further, and the mimic was hopeful that it would be able to get the skill to level 10 in a reasonable amount of time. "Your actions have altered the flows of chaos." Boxy bolted upright at the new notification, scanning its surroundings warily. Its body was still a bit wobbly, but it nevertheless forced itself to be ready for anything. And something did indeed happen. Not to it, or any of its familiars, but to the Lich. The bright red gem embedded in the Valley of Valeria's breasts gradually turned from red to yellow. The crimson glow of her dot-like pupils also shifted into a distinctly more golden hue, making them seem almost like miniature suns floating through a pitch-black sky. Was this a good or bad thing? The mimic desperately wanted to know, but it had no idea. This was, after all, the first time its Agent of Chaos skill had been triggered. Valeria Vortina's character sheet. You may skip to the next chapter. General information. Valeria Vortina. Lich. Greater. Female. 2 months old. Level 25 Banshee. Max. Level 41 Lich. 863 out of 1,018 HP. 0 per second. 2,045 out of 2,045 MP. Plus 1.8 per second. Attributes. Strength, 8. Dexterity, 6. Agility, 18. Endurance, 202. Intelligence, 409. Wisdom, 188. Mental fortitude, 61. Faith, negative 124. Perception, 21. Banshee skills. Sonic Scream, level 6. Mind Invader, level 3. Detect Life, level 5. Possession, level 6. Lich skills. Necromancy, level 10. Max. Lord of the Dead, level 8. Hexcraft, level 6. Physical Nullity, level 4. Life Drain, level 5. Permafrost Aptitude, level 4. Anti-Magic Shell, level 2. Other skills. Ethereal Body, Level 6. Blight Spawn, Level 3. Taboo, Level 5. Domination Mastery, Level 2. Permafrost Mastery, Level 3. Part 2. The Mimic and its posse were headed northwest through the mountainous wilderness while staying away from the Imperial Highway. After some consideration, Boxy had decided to leave the Empire's territory behind for good. It simply didn't feel safe being in the same country as the man called Edward, although one could argue that, given the Spymaster's prowess, nowhere was truly beyond his reach. Another reason for its decision, though not immediately apparent, was the monster's desire to blend into civilized society. It would be difficult, true, but it would present the creature with numerous delicious opportunities to amass information, strength, and wealth. The rewards were most definitely worth the risks, especially considering that someone was now actively hunting it. This time around, however, Boxy planned to be far more cautious. It had made quite a few mistakes during its stay in Erosa, and as a result it had learned a great deal. First of all, its chest-shaped body posed a significant problem. It had managed to get away with it somewhat by concealing itself in baggy clothing, but its towering figure simply stood out too much. That said, being easily recognizable was not without its benefits. The Mimic had learned the advantages of having a reputation when the dwarf called Grog had given it a few additional funds just before its capture. The problem was that the only humanoid form it could take was much too intimidating, which made people suspicious. And if the Mimic's instincts had taught it anything, it was that suspicious prey was a pain in the lid. Therefore, since it currently lacked any other viable disguise options, it needed to rank up into something that could more freely change its form. Although it had some reservations about abandoning its square shell, it was hard to deny that treasure chest was a poor choice of disguise outside of dungeons or warehouses. Besides, if it had the ability to freely change its shape, then there was nothing stopping it from reverting back to a chest if it ever felt uncomfortable. Just because it could be anything didn't mean that it had to be something different, after all. The second order of business was evading appraisal, though that was no longer an issue now that it had become a hero. The essence concealment skill would likely prove to be quite tasty once it got the hang of it. Things like name, race, and age could be chosen freely, but jobs and skills were a different story. Just as the ability's name implied, it could only hide the more practical parts of the Mimic status. It was impossible to show things Boxy did not possess, meaning that there was no way to make the monster appear stronger than it was. While it certainly would have preferred to have that option, the skill's ability to obscure its true nature was already more than enough. Said main function was also surprisingly easy to use. After substituting its race, gender, and age labels with less conspicuous identifiers, all that was left was to set its Mimic job to hidden. Doing so would automatically hide all related skills and even adjust its attributes, HP and MP accordingly. This conveniently allowed it to conceal the rather substantial gains it had received from cadaver absorption. Perks could be hidden as well, which was equally important. While Boxy wasn't absolutely certain, it could hazard a guess that having Butcher of Humanity on its fake status was not a good idea. It was definite proof that the creature had killed at least 5,000 people, which, as Snack pointed out, was not the sort of body count a respectable member of society would have. However, simply concealing the perk's existence would do little to solve the biggest problem it had encountered when blending in: the human's instinctive fear of it. Based on its experiences in Erosa, and what it had overheard from Edward, Boxy had deduced that it was Butcher of Humanity that had caused such unfavorable reactions. Or, rather, there didn't seem to be any other explanation for why humans, and only humans, would react so negatively towards its disguise. Subconsciously broadcasting the fact that it viewed them as nothing more than sources of food and levels was useful in a fight, but far less so if it wanted to interact with them in a non-violent manner. It might have been possible to offset that particular side effect, but for the moment it seemed that Boxy could never truly blend into human society. Which was precisely why it was headed north, towards the Ishigar Republic. Judging from what it had heard about it during its stay in Erosa, It was an elf-run nation where humans were the minority. It wasn't ideal, but it was an infinitely better option than lingering in the Lodrak Empire, even without the looming threat of the Spymaster. Then there was perhaps the most difficult hurdle it had to clear, learning to interact with people. Short, awkward words and nodding had worked in seedy places like the Mercenary Guild, but were generally insufficient when dealing with people in the long term. It had made some steps towards learning proper conversation, but its facial expressions were abysmal, at least according to Snack. It really couldn't help it, though. Mimics were born without faces, so it was only natural that Boxy would have trouble controlling such a complicated and delicate set of muscles. Any face it created tended to twist into a goofy grin whenever it wasn't feeling angry or hungry. It had become something of an acquired reflex that the shapeshifter struggled to keep in check. And while one could certainly argue that constant smiling was hardly a bad thing, that clearly didn't apply to the slightly mad grin that Boxy's faces usually settled into. The expression was off-putting enough on its own, but downright creepy when used by a 2-meter-tall, barrel-chested man in dark and baggy clothing. The sight had been so bizarre and unsettling that even non-humans had given Mr. Morningwood a wide berth when it had first tried it. Hence, it had always worn a face wrap that concealed all of its features aside from its gleaming eyes. As odd as it seemed, wearing a mask whenever it had gone out in public had been the least conspicuous option by far. Last but not least, Boxy had to learn to read. Spoken language wasn't a problem thanks to the frequent telepathic communication it had with various demonic entities, whether it was Carl or one of its familiars. Exchanging thoughts allowed it to not only hear the words, but also comprehend their meaning. Numbers were also easy enough to understand, since basic arithmetic seemed to come naturally with intelligence and wisdom growth. However, reading letters was an entirely different matter. Words were far more fluid and less strictly defined than mathematics, meaning there was simply no quick and easy way to learn the quirks and rules of written language. And so, after thoroughly thinking matters through, the mimic had compiled a short mental list of what it needed to accomplish, which at present looked something like this. 1. Rank up. 2. Learn to read. 3. Learn to act. 4. Move to Elven Country. 5. Question marks. 6. Profit. Boxy was quite proud of its well-thought-out and obviously foolproof plan. Surely, nothing but good things could come from such a masterful design. Okay, admittedly, it was a work in progress that still had a few kinks to be ironed out, but it was nevertheless a fairly solid plan, in its opinion.
Boxy!
A cheerful, oddly melodic voice trilled affectionately, interrupting the mimic's silent plotting. It had to grow a head on its backside in order to answer, as the person that had called was not, as one might expect, its succubus familiar. Nor was it the gnome that had had the profound misfortune of getting involved with it.
What is it, Nasty?
The one that had raised her voice was none other than Valeria, though the mimic had already nicknamed her in accordance with her foul flavor. Rather than being insulted, though, she actually seemed to enjoy the moniker, likely because she had misinterpreted it as being nasty in bed. This didn't seem to be her only delusion, as she had been acting especially friendly ever since her red bits had turned yellow earlier. She always had a wide, demure smile on her face, and the once intense look in her eyes was much softer, as was her tone of voice, especially when talking to Boxy. The way she floated about was also odd. She would lean forward constantly, presenting her sizable breasts to the monster, even though it clearly had no interest in such things. Plus, she had gotten into the habit of hovering, both figuratively and literally, in close proximity to the mimic. Her love-struck behavior was horribly mismatched with her new identity as an undead abomination, but the lich was definitely acting like she had developed a crush on Boxy. Not that the mimic had been able to deduce that on its own. It lacked the capacity to form or even understand emotional attachments like love or friendship, and would probably still be clueless as to why the undead woman was acting so clingy if it hadn't consulted Snack on the matter. The trigger for the Lich's drastic and completely unnecessary shift in personality had undoubtedly been the practice session a few hours ago. Or, more specifically, the infuriatingly cryptic Agent of Chaos skill which had somehow activated itself afterwards. Granted, Nasty fawning over Boxy could be a good thing in the long run, but it didn't exactly appreciate the attention at the moment.
"What are you thinking about?"
her sickeningly sweet voice asked.
"Planning," it replied curtly.
"Oh, my!"
she squealed.
"Already making preparations for our marriage?"
No. It had no intention of attempting to understand or even acknowledge Valeria's advances, let alone reciprocate. She truly was delusional if she thought her womanly charms could somehow entice or seduce the mimic, which nobody understood better than Zira. Consequently, the succubus was still able to follow her beloved master happily without a single shred of jealousy towards the newbie. Rather than cause needless internal strife by butting in, she simply let the silly lich do as she pleased. Sparking competition between the two of them would have been utterly pointless anyway. The succubus was confident that her exquisite flavor was far more appealing to Boxy than undead flesh conjured from dirt. Not to mention that Zira and Boxy were already bound together by a contract far more powerful than something as silly as marriage. Cora, of course, was the same as always. She strolled idly in front of the group, keeping an eye out for trouble and not caring in the slightest what those horny bitches in the back were doing. From her perspective, the intense session earlier had been little more than a weirdly pleasant, albeit slightly awkward, memory. It was not something that she was particularly interested in repeating. She wasn't so weak-willed as to be swayed by a single fuck, and still viewed the mimic as nothing more than a fun master and a fighter worthy of respect. As for Fizzy, she hadn't recovered from her ordeal in the slightest. She obediently followed after Boxy, but her soulless eyes and stiff movements were more like a mechanical doll's than a person's. She was still dealing with the indescribable trauma of being sexually assaulted by an uncaring creature that had already spent weeks beating and abusing her as it saw fit. She felt disgusted, violated, and enraged, though she couldn't let any of that show for fear that the beatings would resume. Part of her had started to outright hate Valeria for serving as the catalyst to that particular nightmare. Not to mention the way she was fawning over Boxy, which was so sickening that it made the gnome want to smash her phylactery into tiny pieces, set them on fire, and take a literal shit on them. Not necessarily in that order. However, that obviously wasn't an option given Boxy's intention to use the lich for its own gain. That was why the only thing she could do at the moment was try her best to ignore the repulsive heretic.
"Aw, that's a shame,"
Valeria pouted.
"Then what are you planning, Honeybuns?"
However, neither she nor the rest of the group were prepared for Boxy's answer.
"Operation Tasty Cock."
The entire party ground to a halt. Cora struggled valiantly not to laugh, while Zira's face split into a malicious grin. Valeria and Fizzy could only stare blankly in stunned surprise.
That is..."
stammered the lich.
"What do you mean by tasty cocks?"
"Tasty and shiny things yielded by chesting or cheap killing."
Cora roared with laughter as she clutched her stomach and fell to the ground. She reached up to high-five Zira, the prankster who was undoubtedly responsible for teaching Boxy that obscene acronym. Relief washed over Fizzy as she saw their interaction and realized that it hadn't said that because it was in the mood. She wasn't sure how her mind had jumped to that conclusion, but it had paralyzed her so completely that she had literally forgotten to breathe. She then realized how ridiculous the notion had been. Though she was fuzzy on the details, she remembered reading that mimics were genderless monsters that lacked the ability to reproduce. The notion that such a being was even physically capable of sexual arousal was so crazy that the gnome felt incredibly foolish for even considering it. The awkward feeling, however, was immediately drowned by the ocean of negative thoughts swimming in her head. Meanwhile, Valeria seemed to have finally gotten the message that she was not desirable to Boxy in the slightest, causing her shoulders to droop in morbid disappointment. Despite all this, the mimic had interpreted their reactions as a generally positive response. It had spent nearly an hour discussing the matter with Snack before they had arrived at Operation Tastycock, so it was reassuring to see that the time spent hadn't been a total waste. Though it wasn't as if the name was all that the two of them had talked about, a good portion of the conversation had also been spent determining the optimal methods for completing the plan's various objectives. For instance, learning to read, write, and interact with people were all things that it could learn from Snack. Though she appeared to have a one-track mind, the succubus was the smarter of the two familiars by far. She was also significantly more trustworthy than either Fizzy or Nasty, since she could be ordered to speak only the truth. There would be plenty of time to learn from her as they traveled to the Northern Republic, and if Boxy's acting skills weren't quite up to snuff by the time they arrived, well then, that simply meant that it would have to spend more time practicing in the wilderness. However, their party wasn't heading directly north. Their current heading was actually west by northwest. The detour had been deemed necessary in order to allow Boxy to address the first and most vital part of its plan, achieving a rank up. Maxing out the shapeshift skill was something that it could do more or less anywhere, but it needed to challenge sufficiently powerful opponents if it was to get those last three levels of its mimic job. Thankfully, according to Nasty, there happened to be a dungeon in this direction. She had allegedly gone inside by accident while searching for that old Arcanium tower, before she had turned herself into a lich. Boxy wondered how anyone could possibly confuse a tower with a dungeon, but it received its answer the instant they arrived. You have entered the Spire of the Jade King. The notification popped up just as a huge black tower came into view. The structure appeared roughly 40 meters tall and half as wide, with a notable lack of windows or balconies. It was hard to tell from a distance, but the outside wall was so perfectly smooth that it looked to have been hewn from a single piece of black stone, rather than cobbled together from brick and mortar. At a second glance, the spire looked less like a man-made structure and more like a gigantic rock sticking out of the ground. It was also surrounded on all sides by hundreds of meters worth of tall, dense hedges that formed a kind of complex maze. Boxy quickly and quietly scouted the perimeter, confirming what Valeria had said regarding the residents of the tall green corridors. The place was filled with living stone statues that marched in strict formation as though they were some kind of military outfit. Their appearance was clearly modeled after someone's vision of the ideal human male, and did not appear to be all that realistic. Their ripped abs, slim physiques, well-toned musculature, handsome faces, and generously sized packages were so over the top that even Boxy was finding it hard to take them seriously. That said, even if they were technically naked, the statues were hardly defenseless. They were a type of golem, a magical construct of animated stone, which meant that their bodies were much tougher than the flesh of actual humans. They also carried enormous body-covering shields and massive spears, all made from yet more stone. It was obvious that the things could both take and dish out ridiculous amounts of punishment. But there was an upside to the situation. Golems were simple, straightforward creatures that only engaged their enemies in direct close-quarters combat. Granted, the stone soldiers seemed significantly more coordinated than one might expect from a bunch of brickheads, but they still lacked any form of magical or ranged support. Boxy determined that this would be a good place to check on the growth of its minions. It had been steadily gaining intelligence over these past 3 weeks by gaining levels in its mimic job and various related skills, and with its other jobs restored, it now had significantly more MP than when it had been captured. The extra juice meant that Zero was currently a level 27 succubus and level 20 pyromancer, while Cora was a level 27 fiend and level 20 berserker. At 2,120, the latter's HP had even slightly surpassed the mimic's, though her MP was as abysmally low as ever. Regardless, both of them had a few new skills each, not to mention that the mimic had yet to see Valeria really get serious. They had run into a few attackers on their way to the dungeon, but they hadn't even been a challenge for the traveling monster troop. It was important that Boxy know just how strong the minions it had at its disposal were, and this was as good a place as any to test things out. After scoping out the area a little further, The mimic returned to the dungeon's outskirts, where its posse had been told to wait quietly for its return.
Boxy?
The monster's brief absence had given Fizzy the courage to speak up for the first time since she had been raped.
What?
That...
Then again, perhaps speak was too strong a word. She was still simultaneously exhausted, traumatized, terrified, and furious, so she was having some trouble articulating her words. She couldn't even look directly at the chest-shaped monster and instead stared intensely at her own feet while her tiny voice leaked from her dry throat.
I need to get supplies. Fresh food and water. Since my old ones were, blighted.
It had been more than 24 hours since she'd last had a solid meal. She'd managed to fill her canteen with water from a small stream they had passed on the way, but she had already drunk it all in an ultimately misguided attempt to fill her belly.
Also, I need sleep. Like, a lot.
There was also the matter of her depleted stamina. It was nearly evening, and they had perhaps 2 hours before the sun set completely. The group had been walking for most of the day, draining what little physical strength she had left. Her already sleep-deprived body had been running on empty in pretty much every sense of the word and would have already collapsed if not for the endurance holding her up. She was certainly in no condition to spend hours, maybe even days, tackling a dungeon full of traps, monsters, and Jeremiah knew what else.
Can we rest? Please?
She begged, barely holding back tears. Boxy was troubled by this. While it was true that they were in no particular rush, it didn't feel like waiting around either. If the gnome's biological needs were going to keep getting in its way, then they would have a problem. She was the only one who needed to be pampered like this. Boxy's constitution was much stronger than the gnome's, so it could last significantly longer without food or sleep. Admittedly, it also required an enormous amount of nutrition, but it was a far less picky eater than Fizzy. Zira and Cora were both demons, and as such didn't need food or water at all. Or sleep, for that matter. Though they did get tired, they could just be resummoned in order to instantly fix the problem. And Valeria was the least demanding of all. She was undead, meaning that she needed zero rest or sustenance. All her body required was that her phylactery be safe and relatively close by. Which, of course, it was, as it was currently tucked away in the fleshy sack at the base of Boxy's huge tongue. However, it would seem the Lich still had an opinion to offer on the matter of sleep.
Boxy, I think you should let the poor thing rest.
Fizzy's eyes widened in shock.
She's only a gnome,
Valeria continued.
If you don't let creatures like her properly recover from their fatigue, then their performance will drop, and they can make crucial mistakes in combat.
Ha! Huh. I suppose that's true, isn't it?
The mimic stated, as if only now realizing what should have been common sense.
It is. Besides, she added, I also need some time to hunt for fresh bodies and replenish my own minions. I can't make undead out of rocks, twigs, and dirt, you know. So how about you let her rest while I do that?
Yeah, okay. Boxy finally gave in. You and Fizzy go hunt. Get meat and zombies.
Yes, my darling,
she chirped.
Snack, go with them and guard the small one. Make sure she doesn't die.
Understood, master.
Zira gave a small bow.
Arms, you're with me. Let's go see how strong those golems are.
You got it, boss.
The five of them split up, with Zira, Valeria, and Fizzy going away from the dungeon in search of prey, while Boxy and Cora prepared themselves for—
Oh, crap!
The mimic shouted suddenly.
Hmm? What's wrong, boss?
Boxy had just realized. It had used one of its precious mithril daggers as a projectile weapon during its brief bout with Valeria. However, in all the excitement of completing the quest, getting its jobs restored and being reconnected with its familiars, it had completely forgotten to pick it up. meaning that it was currently laying on the fourth floor of the abandoned Arcanium Tower, at least half a day's walk away. Part 3. A lich, a paladin, and a succubus walked into a forest. Although it seemed like the beginning of a bad joke, it was currently Valeria, Fizzy, and Zira's reality. The gnome glanced up at the floating undead several times before screwing up the courage to speak.
Valeria?
Hmm? What is it, little one?
Why did you stand up for me back there?
Oh, that. I was simply doing my duty.
What duty?
What sort of worthless woman would let her future husband's precious little pet waste away like that? You're so small and fragile that I couldn't help myself.
Anger flared once again in Fizzy's eyes. The rage, which had been dulled somewhat by the mimic's ridiculously named operation, returned full force and then some. Not because Valeria had called her a pet. Though she likely intended it as an insult, it would probably be an upgrade from the position of property that the gnome had reluctantly resigned herself to. What truly made her mad was that this incorrigible pervert had taken pity on her.
No need to thank me.
Valeria grinned, inadvertently adding more fuel to the flame. The gnome's grip on her oversized wrench tightened, and she gritted her teeth angrily. Did this insufferable bint not realize just whose fault it was that she was so miserable? She wanted to take a swing at this piece of trash and smash her teeth in so badly that it almost overpowered her sense of reason. Almost being the operative word. The difference in their statuses and levels meant that act would be equivalent to suicide. Even if paladins were the natural enemy of undead, liches were their antithesis and were well equipped to fight the living. A fight between the two of them at this stage was sure to end in the gnome's demise. Not to mention that even if Fizzy pulled off a miracle and won, Boxy would never let her off with just a few little love taps.
Sorry to break this up,
Zira butted in.
But the master just informed me it has need of the lich.
Really?
Valeria exclaimed, the yellow points of her otherwise black eyes flaring dangerously.
Yes, something about having to go back to the White Tower. Then I shall return to my darling's side immediately.
The lich bolted back the way they'd come, twirling merrily through the air like a leaf on the wind. The reason Boxy had called her back was because it wanted to return to the tower to retrieve its forgotten dagger. Even though it wouldn't be particularly useful against golems, that didn't mean that it could just leave one of its most treasured shinies behind. Unfortunately, the blight-infested stretch of land surrounding the tower was crawling with undead, which would make the trip much more annoying and time-consuming than it had any right to be. Which was where Valeria came in. The lich had bragged at length about her skills shortly after she'd been recruited, and the mimic was particularly interested in her Lord of the Dead skill. According to Valeria, it was a lich-exclusive ability that no human necromancer could ever hope to obtain. It not only strengthened all minions under her command, but also allowed her to dominate and control the feral undead that appeared naturally due to the blight. Assuming she was telling the truth, she could direct all those rotting vermin away from Boxy, allowing the mimic to travel unhindered. This would not only give her the chance to rebuild her undead army, but would also allow Fizzy plenty of time to rest and recuperate. The mimic had decided on this course of action because it had determined it to be the most efficient. It was most assuredly not going to be the romantic moonlit walk that the delusional lich was likely imagining. Now that it was just Fizzy and Zira, the gnome found herself temporarily at a loss.
You should get busy,
the succubus suggested.
It would be quite troublesome if your pitiful performance were to become a burden to my master.
Right. Then you'll help me hunt, right? The faster I get what I need, the less of a burden I'll be.
I suppose that's true. Very well, I'll back you up.
The two of them roamed the sparsely forested area for a while before they ran across a large black bear, which was soon charred even blacker when Zira's magic killed it instantly. While it may have been enormous, and certainly looked menacing, it was no match for a spell-slinging demon that completely overwhelmed it in terms of levels. Fizzy took out her dagger and began to carve the meat into appropriately sized steaks. She would grill them up, eat her fill, and preserve the rest with the salt she'd found in Boxy's storage. The succubus sat down on a nearby rock, watching her work with a vaguely dissatisfied look on her face. Her glare made the paladin more than a little uneasy.
Do you hate me?
She finally asked. The gnome's choice of conversation topic was perhaps a little weird, but the succubus was already feeling bored. Exciting and fun things happened all the time whenever her beloved master was around, but that also meant that things were incredibly dull whenever it wasn't. Therefore, she felt she might as well indulge Fizzy with a bit of idle chatter to kill time.
I do. Oh. Don't take it personally. I dislike all mortals that aren't master. Also most demons. And all but one god. I don't really have a shit list so much as a not shit list. And even that has only 6 names on it. I see.
Silence once again reigned, broken only by the wet sound of the knife digging into flesh.
Can I ask what your real name is? You know that there's no truth to the myth that you can control a demon if you know its name, right?
Zira rolled her eyes. It wasn't an entirely unfounded notion, since names were incredibly important when it came to summoning contracts, but it was still a ridiculous idea.
That's not it. It's just that your name isn't actually Snack, is it? Actually, you're right. It isn't. I should see if I can get it changed. I'm sorry, what? I am my master's snack. Is it really so wrong for my name to reflect that? You like being eaten? Of course I don't, you foolish creature. I love it. I adore it. I need it. Being devoured the instant I was back in the physical realm was the best welcome back gift I could have asked for. Just thinking about it is...
Realization dawned as Fizzy watched the succubus's expression contort with lust. Come to think of it, hadn't this demon also eagerly shouted, do me, during this morning's incident?
That is why I'm sure I will never lose to that uppity ghost. Master likes my flavor the best. That's not something to be proud of!
Fizzy shrieked internally. Still, that made it official. The number of incorrigible perverts around Boxy was not one, but 2. Actually, given this pattern, it was highly likely that the red demon was just as bad. How had they all managed to congregate around a creature with absolutely no sex drive? The mimic had made it clear that it did not enjoy the act and simply used it as practice to increase its skill, which the gnome was inclined to believe, given that it hadn't assaulted her in all this time. If it weren't for Valeria, she wouldn't be in the situation, where she felt disgusted to be inside her own body. Then again, making the pain stop would be so easy. All she had to do was take the knife in her hand and drag it across her. Fizzy immediately shook away the dangerous thought that had crept into her skull. She decided that it would be best if she simply ignored the hopeless slut of a demon and focused herself entirely on preparing the bear's meat. After separating what looked to be the best pieces, Fizzy fired up her mana-fueled welding torch and grilled them thoroughly. She gorged herself on as much of the tough, bland meat as she could stomach, then packaged the rest for later. It could probably last her for a few more days before it went bad. Once she was finished, she walked over to a soft-looking patch of grass and fell like a sack of turnips, slipping into a coma-like sleep the instant her head hit the ground. She was so tired that she couldn't even dream, let alone have nightmares, though it wouldn't be a stretch to say that the real nightmare was when she was awake. But, at least for tonight, circumstances had conspired to allow her a proper rest for the first time since she'd been imprisoned. She slept from sundown until well after sunrise for a total of 13 hours. The gnome sprang to her feet the instant she regained consciousness and looked around in panic. She was so used to being woken up with violence that her subconscious mind had perceived her late, peaceful morning as a matter of concern. It took her several seconds before she had woken completely and several more before she reassured herself that she wouldn't be beaten for oversleeping. It was only then that she managed to calm herself down. Looking around, she saw that the succubus was exactly where she'd been when Fizzy had fallen asleep, sitting idly on a nearby stump and staring off into the distance. The entire area was covered in scorch marks, suggesting that the demoness had taken to flinging fireballs at random to alleviate her boredom. There were also some charred lumps of meat here and there, presumably from monsters stupid enough to cross her line of sight. She didn't seem to notice that the gnome had woken up, so Fizzy decided to call out to get her attention.
Good morning!
Zira's eyes turned away from the horizon to stare contemptuously at the pint-sized paladin.
Oh, finally awake? Yeah.
I hope you got plenty of rest and do not embarrass my master.
I won't. Trust me, upsetting Boxy is the last thing I want to do.
She sheepishly twiddled her thumbs.
Well, so long as you understand. And, where is on its way back?
The succubus interrupted her.
I think they'll be here in about half an hour, so we'd better get back to the dungeon.
All right. You didn't do anything weird to me while I slept, right?
This was an entirely valid concern. Zira had been the one who had manipulated Fizzy's memory back in Rosa, and she always did it after putting the gnome to sleep with magic. There was no telling whether she might have done the same last night, especially considering her deceitful nature. The fact that the succubus didn't answer with words, but instead with a mischievous smile, did little to reassure the gnome.
Hey! You didn't do anything, right?
The worried paladin kept asking, but received no response as the two of them walked towards the tall black spire in the distance. It was very possible that Zira hadn't actually done anything, and was simply stringing the poor girl along just for kicks, but Fizzy couldn't simply accept such a naive answer. She searched her memory in an effort to spot anything out of place, any potential time she might have lost. Unfortunately, it was all there. The imprisonment, the abuse, the misery, the assault. All of it was there in such vivid detail that they made the gnome even more depressed when she dredged them up. She kept worrying over what Zira might have done as they made their way back to the spire of the Jade King, arriving at roughly the same spot where the group had split up the day before. Cora sat casually on the ground as if waiting for them.
Yo!
She greeted the pair with a wave of her hand. Her only hand.
Ah!
Fizzy recoiled in horror as she realized that the mountain of muscle had been mutilated horribly. She was missing both left arms, half a right arm, and most of her left leg. Large chunks of her left torso had been gouged out, and both of her magnificent metal horns had been broken off almost entirely.
Are you okay? What happened to you?
Nothing much. I was just giving those golem guys a try to see how strong they were, and I got a bit carried away and challenged three of them at once a couple of times.
So, how were they?
Zira asked curiously.
They're hard, and faster than they look. I'd guess about as strong as a level 60 or so adventurer. They're good with those shields, and the spears are pretty bad as well. But those short swords are the worst. They're much sharper than they look.
She wiggled her stumps, as if to prove her point.
Swords? What swords?
Asked Zira.
They pull them out from somewhere if you break their shafts. They get super pissed and start attacking like mad. Must have some golem-specific enrage skills.
The abilities she was referring to would trigger, usually automatically, whenever their user got hit in a weak point, had their HP reduced below a certain threshold, or other such unfavorable circumstances. Though the exact activation conditions varied from one skill to the next, they all shared the trait that they were not preemptive measures, but reactionary ones. Their effects were also far more potent than other skills, making them the perfect tool for turning the tables at the last moment. The Berserker job had quite a few of those abilities at its disposal, which was why and how Cora knew so much about them. Zira scoffed.
Shouldn't be a problem once Master gets back.
Yeah. Wish it'd hurry up already, though.
How can you two be so calm?
Fizzy shrieked.
Bitchface lost two arms and a leg, and you two are just—
You wanna die, you little shit?
Ah!
Cora's casual air disappeared in an instant as she let her bloodlust flow, and the poor gnome could do little more than scream at the unexpected threat and jump behind Zira for cover.
Come on!
The fiend growled at her.
Call me that again! See what happens!
She stood on one leg, taking a few threatening hops towards Fizzy and the slightly sniggering succubus. The fact that she was missing a full third of her body mass somehow made her even more intimidating in the smaller woman's eyes.
"I'm sorry! I'm sorry! I don't know what I said, but I'm sorry!"
she pleaded.
"Like fuck you don't know! I told you to only call me by my name, didn't I?"
"But I did! It's Bitchface McWeak Sauce, isn't it?" "Huh?"
Cora had grandly introduced herself yesterday, so Fizzy was dead certain she'd gotten her name right. So how come it didn't feel right? The fiend in question felt her anger subside a bit at the strangeness of the situation. Her eyes moved between the succubus and the gnome, as if she were trying to piece something together.
Your name was Corny Fizzle something, right?
No, it's Cornhole Jizzbucket.
The fiend and the gnome stared at each other in confusion, until the awkward silence was suddenly broken by Zira, who could no longer contain her laughter. It was a rapid, joyful, mocking laugh that made it abundantly clear that she was laughing at them, not with them.
"You whore!"
Cora roared.
"I'll get you for this!"
Realizing exactly which part of her memory had been tampered with seemed to dispel the effects of the Dreamweaver skill from Fizzy's mind. The implanted memories faded away and the real ones rose to the surface. The realization that Zira had indeed tampered with her mind made the gnome so angry that she seemed to come right back around to a strange calm.
Excuse me, Cora Lentiprix?
She asked, an almost innocent smile on her lips. Hearing someone properly call her by name drastically improved the fiend's mood, and she gave Fizzy a toothy smile while puffing out her chest.
"Yep, that's me."
"Can you hold down snack for me, please?"
"You don't have to tell me twice."
The fiend leapt through the air and crashed right into the still giggling succubus, knocking them both to the ground and pinning her under her weight. Fizzy stepped over to the slightly stunned Zira's head and gripped her tool-turned weapon with both hands. She smashed the succubus's face in repeatedly as Cora kept her pinned to the ground. Fizzy did not hold back in the slightest as she really put her back into each downward swing. Both Cora and Zira were a warlock's familiars. That meant two very important things. They were unable to go against direct orders, and re-summoning them would get rid of any and all injury, even death. Boxy had explained this to both Fizzy and Valeria the day before. However, in her shock at seeing Cora's mutilated form, Fizzy had briefly forgotten. But now that she remembered, she rationalized that it was fine to kill the bitch, right? It was what the masochistic whore seemed to want, so it was fine if she smashed her head open like a fucking tomato, right? She stopped after the seventh hit, holding her bloodied wrench over her head. Was it really okay? She decided to ask Cora, just in case.
"It's fine if I smash her to death, right?"
Probably not,
the fiend said. She sounded disappointed.
"The boss has to waste MP bringing her back, and that makes it a bit cranky."
"Oh.
I think she's good for one more hit, though."
"Oh."
Fizzy exhaled as she felt her tense body relax. She put away her weapon and smiled weakly at Cora.
"Thanks. I really needed that. Hitting things in the face is strangely relaxing, huh?"
Even though violence was the primary cause of the gnome's stress, it had nevertheless been just the outlet she'd been looking for.
"I know, right? I gotta say, you hit well for a pipsqueak."
"Could you not call me that?"
"I call him as I see him, pipsqueak. I mean, you're so tiny you barely come up to my kneecaps."
"Bet I'm taller than you when you're at zero HP."
"Oh? Is that a challenge?"
The fiend glared at the gnome, her eyes glinting with more of the primal bloodthirst that only a fiend could conjure. Her stare alone was enough to make chills run down Fizzy's spine.
"Easy now. You can't kill me, remember? Your boss forbade you."
"Who said anything about killing?"
Cora spoke in a low, slow rumble.
"I can still bitch-slap you for being an uppity cunt who doesn't know her place. That would only mostly kill you."
Whatever confidence Fizzy had gained from hitting Zira disappeared in an instant, and she bowed down on all fours, her forehead touching the ground. It was a magnificent grovel, a perfect 10 out of 10 if someone were to put a score on it.
I'm sorry, I got carried away and became cocky. Please forgive me, Miss Coralantiprix, ma'am.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Pipsqueak.
Part 4.
Welcome back, Master.
Zira greeted Boxy respectfully upon its return. Her face had completely recovered from being smashed in by a pissed-off gnome thanks to her shapeshifting abilities. Even if the mimic didn't particularly care about it, she couldn't possibly allow her beloved master to see such a shameful sight. Unless, of course, it would earn her the rapturous torture she desired.
Hey, boss,
Cora said casually.
Anything exciting happen while you were gone?
Nope. Got my shiny dagger back with no problems.
Huh? Then where's the lich?
She asked while looking around.
Dropped Nasty off on the way, Boxy answered. She's getting her undead together and said she'll need a while to prepare.
Oh. So, can you do something about this now?
She wiggled her stumps. The mimic responded to her request by forcefully dismissing, then re-summoning her. Once the fiend had all her limbs back, Boxy finally turned its attention towards the gnome, forming a head in order to address her.
Did you sleep well?
What? I mean, yes, I slept very well.
She wasn't just saying so, either. The paladin looked noticeably healthier than she had yesterday.
Good.
Boxy had done a great deal of thinking during the night, mostly about the gnome, and it had realized that it was simply pushing her too hard. At first it had been because it had felt rushed by the quest's ambiguous time limit, but that was no longer the case. While the spymaster was no doubt still hunting it, the Empire was a huge place, so the mimic could afford to slow down and treat Fizzy with a bit more care.
From now on, it continued, tell me if you feel tired or hungry, and I will let you rest.
Really?
Yes.
It had decided to think of her not as a mushy meat thing, but a tool or a weapon, one that would break and rust without proper upkeep. Granted, the mimic had never bothered doing maintenance on any of its gear or weapons before, but it nevertheless understood the concept. The only difference was that Fizzy required food and rest instead of sharpening and polishing. Her performance hadn't been especially great, but the survival instincts that Boxy had drilled into her would surely make her a valuable asset further down the line. As long as she maintained that eat-or-be-eaten mentality and proved herself loyal, it might even decide to keep her around once it had finished absorbing her artificer knowledge.
Then I shall take you up on your offer.
As for Fizzy, she wasn't sure what had prompted this, but she certainly wasn't about to look a gift chest in the hinges. Assuming that Boxy was being truthful, this would eliminate one of her biggest gripes with the way she was treated. She was inclined to believe the creature, as the beatings had decreased drastically in both frequency and intensity after the fight with the lich. Except for the rape. Though the mimic had not injured her physically, the wound its thoughtless actions had left on her psyche cut deeper than any blade and hurt worse than any bone fracture. It was not the sort of thing that could be healed by something as basic as food and sleep. But Fizzy had to take whatever silver lining.
Also, sorry about yesterday morning.
The gnome's eyes widened to the point where they looked as though they were about to pop out of her skull.
I got carried away and did something unnecessary, Boxy continued. So, sorry about that.
The mimic was hardly being sincere, of course. The time it had spent with its demon familiars had twisted its perceptions, giving it the impression that unsolicited sexual advances were not socially unacceptable behavior. However, it had spoken at length with Snack during the night regarding Step 3 of Operation Tasty Cock, and been informed that it was, in fact, gravely mistaken. The succubus had also taught it that one of the key things it had to learn in order to blend in with civilized society was how to apologize. Or, more specifically, how to lie when apologizing. Fizzy, however, picked up on its insincerity almost immediately. She knew the monster would never truly repent for anything it had done. But even if it hadn't meant it, the fact that the mimic understood that it had done something unacceptable and cared enough to at least attempt an apology made her feel a tiny bit better. It wasn't nearly enough to erase what had happened, but it was a start.
Thank you for saying that,
she said meekly. Apparently satisfied, the mimic flashed a goofy smile on its snack-shaped face before reverting to its base form and waiting for Nasty to return. It had learned quite a bit about necromancy from her during their trip. It had to know the lich's strengths and weaknesses if it wanted to utilize her correctly, and so it had questioned her extensively regarding her abilities. For starters, it would appear that necromancy, much like cadaver absorption, used corpse-targeted magic. Both the heart and the brain needed to be present for the body to be considered viable, and extensive damage to the body would reduce the strength of the summoned undead. This meant that the mimic would have to share its corpses with the necromancer, though that probably wouldn't be much of an issue. Boxy's daily body count alone was enough to make a mortician dizzy. Another interesting detail was that undead raised with necromancy differed significantly to those that appeared due to the blight. The latter most commonly were mindless zombies, barely more than the reanimated remains of whatever creature they had been. They were entirely feral, lacking the mental capacity to use most of the skills they'd had while alive despite having access to them. Such undead had only their rotting bodies to rely on, which the blight apparently compensated for by greatly boosting their physical attributes. Even then, the zombie's strength and speed depended entirely on the quality of the corpse from which it had been raised. Valeria could control the undead drones easily enough with her Lord of the Dead skill, but she disliked using them as they were little more than cannon fodder. The undead created through necromancy were called hollowed or hollows, as they were essentially constructs forged from mana with no free will whatsoever. Calling them flesh golems would not have been entirely wrong, as the corpses used for their creation were nothing more than raw materials. The body's skin, bone, and muscle had been warped, twisted, and reconfigured into a completely different form. The quality of the corpse was still important, but a huge chunk of a hollow's strength was determined by the skills and attributes of its creator. However, it would appear that there was a limit to the number of minions a necromancer could actually control at any given time. Unlike a warlock's familiars, there was no immortal soul keeping the conjured flesh intact and active. A substitute was necessary, hence why each hollow reserved a portion of their creator's MP's upkeep, temporarily reducing their overall available amount. The exact quantity depended on the strength and species of the raised dead, and the occupied capacity would be restored once the minion was defeated or dismissed. The type of undead created through necromancy depended on both skill level and the caster's choice. Skeletons were the most versatile, as they could be brought forth as soldiers, archers, or even casters. They could also be mass-produced thanks to their low cost, but were extremely fragile. Spectres could be called upon to serve as scouts or to terrorize the living, their intangible forms making them difficult to eliminate without magic. Ghouls were an advanced zombie-type minion most commonly used as shock troops. Their speed, durability, and disease-spreading abilities made them well-suited to quickly overwhelming an enemy, although their uncontrollable screeching made them unusable for any tactic requiring subtlety. The highest class of undead fighters a necromancer could produce were the tough and tenacious Death Knights and the headless powerhouses known as Doulahans. Both were well-versed in martial combat, fighting with skill and precision in addition to their unholy might. Their weapons and armor were transient items manifested from the necromancy skill, meaning that their MP upkeep was significantly higher than that of lesser undead. Boxy had concluded that necromancy was a skill that demanded a certain amount of tactical thinking and foresight. Choosing the right configuration of one's undead entourage and commanding them properly were vital to the caster's success. The latter was particularly challenging, as hollows were completely incapable of making decisions for themselves. A sudden change in situation would leave them unable to adapt in the same way that a warlock's familiars or a monster tamer's pets could. So success or failure would depend almost entirely on their master's ability to direct troops in combat. Which was what Valeria appeared to be struggling with. She may have been a lich with powerful skills and spells, but she was still inexperienced when it came to matters of strategy and tactics. Back in the tower, she had showed herself right at the start of the battle, confronting the invader directly for no reason other than to satisfy her own ego. Boxy considered this a foolish approach, to say the least. Had their positions been reversed, the mimic would have sent wave after wave of undead to tire out its opponent before they had ever met face to chest, if it even showed itself at all. Granted, it was no expert on mixed troop tactics either, but it had still learned quite a bit from all the fights it had taken part in. Whether it was engaging a party of adventurers, fighting alongside its familiars, or swooping in to gobble up both sides of an ongoing battle, it had steadily managed to accumulate a wealth of combat experience and had thus been able to give Valeria a few pointers, which, judging from the undead she brought when she rejoined the others, she had taken entirely to heart. Hardly surprising, considering her bizarre infatuation with the mimic, or, more specifically, with its sexual prowess. So, rather than fill up her necromancy capacity with nothing but death knights like she had done before her reunion with Boxy, she had diversified her undead. She still had 10 of the knights, but they were only intended to serve as the vanguard. She'd also created 6 plate-armored Dullahans wielding huge, double-handed warhammers and 8 skeletal mages for long-range magical support. This platoon of 22 undead was her limit for the moment, but that would gradually increase so long as she kept raising her intelligence attribute. Her troop's fighting strength was equivalent to human adventurers of about level 25 or 30 for the skeletons, and up to about level 40 for the more elite warriors. Boxy was entirely satisfied with the size of its army, since, frankly speaking, they were only intended to help penetrate the dungeon's outer defenses. It would be an issue if the place had nothing but golems in it, as it would be impossible for Valeria to replenish their numbers. Another quirk of the undead was that they couldn't recover their HP in areas without blight. Even though this bunch wouldn't tire out no matter how long they fought, wear and tear were a very real concern, as every sustained injury would be effectively permanent. Even Valeria wasn't exactly exempt from this, although her nature as a lich made it more of a nuisance than a concern. After confirming that everyone was ready, the party, 23 undead, 2 demons, 1 mimic, and a gnome, commenced their assault on the Spire of the Jade King. Their first hurdle was navigating the hedge maze, which was resolved by having Zira fly overhead and guide the ground-based troops towards the spire. Valeria tried to do the same, but her body was conjured partially through earth magic, so she couldn't float more than half a meter above the ground without assistance. The invading party also attempted the obvious solution of tearing their way straight through the green walls in the direction of the spire, but that proved impossible. No matter how often the vibrant hedges were crushed, slashed, or burned away, they always grew back mere moments later. At least there was plenty of room to fight, since the corridors were at least 5 meters wide, sometimes even 6 or 7. Boxy's group was able to form a solid front line with just 6 death knights and 1 extremely enthusiastic fiend, making it impossible for the stone soldiers to surround or flank them. Their formation was put to the test almost immediately, as less than a minute after entering the maze they encountered the first of the resident guardians. It was a mobile statue of an extremely muscular, naked man with a stone helmet framing its handsome visage, just as Boxy's preliminary scouting had revealed. The mimic, however, had neglected to mention that the things were as tall as fiends at more than 2.5 meters, and their massive stone shields and spears were even more intimidating than Fizzy had imagined.
"Arms! Kill it!"
Boxy commanded.
"All right!"
the fiend cheered, smashing her fists together.
"This is gonna be fun!"
Cora strolled up to the golem, and it immediately put its rectangular, door-like shield between them while keeping its stone spear trained on her. Cora assumed a fighting stance and rushed the creature, sidestepping the spear aimed at her midsection to swing her metal-clad fists at the thick shield.
"Ora! Ora! 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 Ora!"
The golem withstood the shower of punches without sustaining much damage, but its shield couldn't last long under the assault and was soon covered in cracks as the stone began to crumble away. It took a long hop backwards, its bare heels scraping along the smooth stone path of the maze. Cora rushed the golem again, but this time was unable to fully avoid its spear. It managed to gouge out part of her shoulder, but the fiend ignored the relatively minor wound and resumed her assault, smashing the shield to pieces before her opponent could back away. With its primary defense compromised, the golem was thrown off balance, forcing it to stagger backwards. Cora seized the opportunity, drawing back one of her right arms to deliver an absolutely massive punch,
Uppercut!
She let out a shout while swinging her fist in a flawless upward motion to smash directly into the underside of the statue's jaw. This was no regular punch, however, as it flew with a speed and ferocity that her literally idiocy-powered muscles were incapable of producing on their own, and flashed with a dull red light at the moment of impact. The force behind the blow was enough to knock the stone soldier, which must have weighed at least 700 kilos, straight off its feet, its back striking the ground with a heavy thud. The fiend immediately closed in on her fallen foe, raising her foot high above the golem's chest.
War stomp!
Her armored boot smashed down onto the prone stone soldier like a miniature comet, leaving behind a trail of more red light. An ear-splitting noise almost like an explosion echoed through the area, the impact sending dust and rocks flying in every direction. The golem had broken into several large chunks as Cora's foot crashed straight through it, covering the stone floor in a spiderweb of cracks. The fiend lifted her boot from the demolished golem's remains and smiled fiercely.
How's that?
Later tonight,
Zira mumbled, her imagination already running wild.
Please don't use that near me. I'll die for sure,
Fizzy pleaded, her own imagination running in a completely different direction. Valeria was too busy staring longingly at Boxy to give a flying fuck about Cora, a sentiment the fiend readily returned. The two of them had formed a silent pact of mutual indifference, and both sides were adamant about upholding it. They may have worked for the same boss, but that didn't mean they had to like each other, or even bother to communicate more than the bare minimum.
That's almost shiny!
Speaking of said boss, the mimic was apparently impressed by the demonstration. To think, both of those tasty-looking attacks had come from a single skill, courtesy of Cora's berserker job. Face Smasher. There's an art to everything, and punching things in the face is no exception. Requirements: Level 15 martial job, Level 4 brawling mastery, Strength 100, Type passive, Range self. Effects: Grants knowledge of a new brawling martial art at each level of this skill. Increases the effectiveness of punches and kicks by 2% per level of this skill. Although Boxy was aware of the existence of martial arts, or just arts for short, this was the first time it had been able to witness them firsthand. In essence, if caster jobs like pyromancers or warlocks had spells, then martial jobs like berserkers and warriors had arts. They both consumed MP to produce magical effects, although their methods of activation were very different. Whereas spells necessitated the forging of a certain mental image, which was then realized through chanting, invoking a martial art required that the body be moved in a very specific manner. For example, uppercut on its own didn't necessarily do a lot of damage, but it had greatly amplified knockback force. War stomp, on the other hand, was a technique that sent tremors through the ground and caused all grounded targets within 5 meters to stagger and lose their balance. The localized quake wouldn't actually do any damage unless it was applied directly to the target's body like Cora had done. The pile of rocks that had once been a golem could attest to just how deadly the shockwaves could be at point-blank range. Satisfied with the demonstration and making a mental note to find out how to obtain dagger-based martial arts at some point in the future, the mimic ordered the rest of the group to advance. It wasn't long before they began to run into groups of stone soldiers rather than individuals. While a single golem was relatively easy to handle, fighting two or three at once was a completely different story, since their cooperation made them much harder to take down without suffering injury. The golems only became more numerous the further into the maze the invaders progressed, with groups of 7 at once becoming the norm by the time they were halfway through. Thankfully, just as Boxy had planned, their front line was able to seal the enemy off, allowing Zira, Valeria, and the skeleton mages to pepper the golems with a barrage of fire and ice-based magic. The resident monster's large frames were actually somewhat beneficial to their formation, as it allowed these ranged attacks to soar over the undead knight's heads without any risk of hitting them. Boxy also joined in on picking off the stone soldiers from a distance, though it mostly stuck to spraying jets of corrosive acid. The assault would have gone faster had the mimic opted to use its highly destructive ruin spells, but it was here to level its mimic job, not its warlock job. Still, the monster demon undead coalition was able to make its way through the hedge maze without any significant difficulty. Even if the golems were good at absorbing physical damage, magical attacks were another story entirely. The barrage of fire, ice, and acid brought them down easily, while Boxy and Valeria's minions kept them at bay. Cora was able to rack up an impressive body count of her own thanks to Fizzy's healing and her master's occasional dark infusion, allowing her to fight as recklessly as she pleased. The same could not be said of their undead vanguard, which had thinned considerably. Though the Death Knights only had to hold out for less than a minute before their opposition was reduced to dust, there was still a limit to how much punishment they could take. Boxy had fully expected this to happen, which was why it had instructed Valeria to bring a good number of spares with her. The instant one undead warrior fell, another stepped up to take its place. As a result, their undead host had been reduced to a single Death Knight, a pair of Dullahans, and four skeletal mages by the time the group made it through the hedge maze. They must have defeated at least 80 stone soldiers in the process, so the fact that any of the undead had survived at all was rather impressive. The rewards for fighting through so many of the golems were substantial as well, as the mimic had reached level 48, and Valeria was at level 43, well on her way to level 44.